hold on to your butts, it's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die! Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. Welcome to episode 169 of Destroy All Culture. I'm Adam P. Nave, and with me, as always, is Aiden Morgan. So, I hear rumors that this is just going to be a big episode about death.
Death, yes. You know, things, death, things ending, things being over, things, bodies, souls, shows, the whole deal.
Well, why don't we start with, I'm going to say, the least, I mean, again, not that it was bad, not that I didn't like it, but just the least of it.
Right, okay.
So after 8 years, Arrow ended.
That was good. Goodbye, Arrow. And I won't say that it was my favorite of the CW shows, because it weren't. And I won't say that I watched every episode, or even every season, now that I think about it.
Right.
Because I didn't. But, you know, I watched enough of it, and I sure as hell watched the finale, because, you know, it's...
Well, that's the thing. Like, I think the last season or two really did kind of up their game.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. And, I mean, it's sort of... Arrow is notable just for sort of kicking off the modern sort of, you know...
Arrowverse.
The Arrowverse, yeah. Superheroes on television, on the CW,
yeah.
And so on. But, I mean, really, it was kind of... It was a little groundbreaking at the time. Even though it wasn't great, especially in the first season.
No. But I remember when it came out, like, I was excited. I was like, okay, we're going to get, like, a new... And as silly as it sounds, it was a new era of DC on TV, right? We'd had... Going back to, like, Batman 66, and then there was the attempt at the Birds of Prey show, and there were various Superboy and of course, Lois and Clark, and
right.
The Flash 90s show, but nothing, I mean, and we didn't know that Arrow would, right? But, like, nothing ever really burst out.
Right. Well, then, like, Smallville, maybe. But
oh, yeah, I forgot about Smallville. I tried to forget about Smallville. Yeah.
But, I mean, there's a difference between occasional sort of attempts to, like, make superhero show, and Smallville, actually, is a great example, because... It was so reticent to actually really be the comic book show it could have.
Right.
So that was always the thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I remember watching the first, and not like I was like, watch for a show of Arrow, I was like, this will someday be a universe. No, but you had a feeling that like they were doing something different.
Yeah.
Just even through little teases of like, let's put a Deathstroke helmet and all that. Like from the beginning, they were kind of going, "Yeah, we're a comic book show. Like we like the comic books. We're not afraid of them."
Right, and we know that our audience also, you know, or a lot of our audience also knows the comic books, so they can appreciate the world we're building.
Right, and again, to be fair, like things like Lois and Clark and the Flash show and all did that as well.
Mm-hmm. True.
But. Again, like it was just, it felt like a new start, especially after Smallville, which was always ashamed of itself, right?
Yeah. Even in the latter seasons, like when they brought in sort of like, you know, the Justice Society and so on.
Right. And all the really badly.
Yeah, exactly. And so.
The Leather Vest Gang.
Yes, that's exactly it. So even when they did that, and the horrendously bad sort of. Kirby influenced final season with, you know,
right.
Darkseid and Apocalypse, but this seemed like it was doing something a little different. So
yeah, and I mean, and they did right, like they ended up taking a show that was just a Batman ripoff.
Yeah,
and you know, it's like there are no superpowers. There's nothing going on here, and then we start introducing superpowers and then magic, and it's just like it grew with the universe it spawned.
Right.
And it did, frankly. Like, it spawned an entire, like, you know, I mean, this is the CW's bread and butter now, is all based off of that one show.
Pretty much. I mean, there's a weird other side of CW, sort of like the Dynasty or Jane the Virgin side of it,
right.
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Both of those are good shows in their own right. But yeah, I mean, really, they're really best known now for their superhero... DC,
I mean, they have like what? Well, up until Arrow, they had like five of them. Now they have four.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Yeah. and we're gonna have at least one more, if not two, soon.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, every year they do, like, these giant, like, impossible-to-figure-out crossovers. And impossible production-wise, not, you know, watching them.
Right.
Like, it's become a thing. And I think that really, like, the Berlanti Group has kind of done for TV what Marvel did for movies.
Yes, that is a really good and succinct way of putting it.
So, yeah, you know, and again, as a final episode, I think it had some interesting ground in that, like, we have the big crossover where your main character dies.
Mm-hmm.
And then we come back and have an episode that, like, takes place in the new future.
Right.
And then we're going to go back and be like, and now we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah. And it sort of, you know, it was funny because it really kind of honored the structure of Arrow with, you know, sort of structured around flashbacks, which
right.
is always what the show loved to do. And what I found really quite funny was that one, also William getting kidnapped. I mean, it's not an episode of Arrow until William gets kidnapped. So they did that. But I found it really kind of funny that they flashed back to sort of first season Oliver Queen,
right.
But they did it with an action scene that they just, like, in a style that they never did at the time. Like, that was, like, they didn't introduce those sorts of, like, supremely violent, like, one-shot fight
oh, sure.
scenes until, like, later on. So I sort of got a kick out of them doing it because I was like, oh, this is what the show would have looked like if they sort of had the same sort of crew and confidence out of the gate.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And I did actually like the William getting kidnapped thing was great thematically because, again, like, assuming the Arrow and Birds of Prey show doesn't get Canary show doesn't get picked up, which no one knows, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But it had that thematic tie of, at the end of that episode, of course, Mia watches William get kidnapped.
I know.
And then she goes back in time and she saves William. Like, it just had a nice, it had a nice line to kind of wrap things
it
up.
It did. And then they unveil the Arrow statue, which looked a little underwhelming, but whatever. and then of course, and I was like, oh, that's from last week's, you know, 20 years in the future episode.
Right.
So that's cool. I like the tie-ins. Like they're really, I like the way they're thinking it through, in ways.
Yeah,
that,
I also like. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
And so I was going to say in ways that most superhero shows before the Arrowverse never did. They're just
right.
It was disposable TV. You know, so anyway.
Yeah, no, I also did like that they bring Mia back from after the episode with her.
Right.
But the other characters from that episode haven't gotten there yet.
Yes, I find that really fascinating.
And so you kind of play this game of, like, they don't know what's coming, she does. And, you know, how does this influence what they end up doing? It was a nice, very subtle bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd still like to know exactly. Well, I mean, I don't know how Dinah gets into the future, so I'm
right. I mean, they cut her story off right before it.
Yes.
So they can answer that in the spinoff if we get it.
Mm-hmm. If we get it, well, we may. Be fun if we.
And of course, we get the payoff to the entire Diggle thing, which, you know, they've been teasing for like 7 years.
Yes.
Including revealing that, like, his last name, like, was almost Stewart. And at the end of this, of course, like, an alien ship lands and he opens up this box and there's a green glowing thing in it.
Who knows what that could be?
Right? You know, apparently he's going to be in Flash this week, but it has nothing to do with that.
Okay.
And he mentioned he's going to Metropolis, so of course the Superman Lois Lane show, he will maybe show up.
Yeah, possible.
And of course, there's still that HBO Max Green Lantern show that could end up just starring him, which I still think is a great move.
Yeah, that will be delightful. It would be very weird at this point if they turned around and gave us a Green Lantern show on HBO Max that didn't have John Ramsey.
Well, the only reason they might do it is just because it creates that problem of how much of his backstory do you bring in?
Right.
For people who haven't seen it, of course, when you do the crossovers, because it's not airing on the CW, it creates problems if they do it. It creates problems mm-hmm. if they don't.
Right. Yeah.
So I am just curious to see where they go.
Yeah. Me too. Yeah. And
there's no clean answer.
Yeah. And HBO shows are They just they also of course there's that different, just a decidedly different look and feel based on production value, budget, and what you can get away with. So it's going to be, I mean, in the same way that the, you know, Titans, for example, don't occupy the same universe as the Super Friends for pretty obvious, or and Doom Patrol for pretty obvious reasons, because they're, it's all so bizarre. Yeah.
But yeah, I think, again, like, as an ending for an 8-year type of thing, like, they did, they, you know, as you mentioned, like, they did flashbacks, like, it felt like it was tying things together from the start of the show. It, you know, it, I think they had a really good idea in making it focus on Diggle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, otherwise he would have gotten lost in, like, shifting point of views.
Right. Yeah, no, the Diggle, the giving the point of view to Diggle, I thought was probably the smartest choice they could have made for a finale. Yeah. Because he's kind of the heart of the show, so
Yeah.
You know, and they brought all those people. It's weird, though, seeing, like, these emotional scenes between characters who technically, up until sort of last week, didn't really know each other in that same context, but it still worked emotionally, so.
Right. So I mean, the only kind of issue I have is just the, you know, he brought back some people, and I like the metric they used. Like, he couldn't bring back anyone that would have blown his own life, right?
Right.
But he brought back certain people, but in the documentary section at the beginning, which was a callback to that old documentary, right?
Right.
We have them mentioning, like, the crisis, and, like, apparently I was dead in this other timeline, so the world knows? But apparently. Don't have their memories back? Like, what?
Yeah,
I firmly expect that to be ignored going forward.
Oh god, yeah. I mean, it's the same. I mean that documentary episode was pretty terrible. I mean, we've already talked about that. Just how sort of badly it bungled that particular premise, and they seem to be leaning into that. Just let's continue to fuck it up with a documentary idea. And I was kind of glad they got away from it, because that didn't make a lot of sense when. Yeah,
no,
for the
all.
Reasons you've mentioned. Yes, exactly. And I have to say the scene with Mia and Felicity talking, that was, once again, though, I thought that was very emotionally sort of on point and affecting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did wonder a little bit when they were shutting down the bunker for the last time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little titty petty thing, but it made me laugh. You know, they have that big globe from the ceiling, that, like, half globe that has all the screens.
Right.
And, like, the lights start going out, and then the globe starts raising into the ceiling and goes out. And I'm like, why?
I know.
Like, if whenever you turn on the lights, that globe is there, why does it retract? Like, what use does that actually bring?
That's, I had the same question, actually.
And it was just a little weird production moment of just, okay.
Yeah. And then the lights go out, and then you hear an organ going, da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, totally. That's... oh, Jesus. Moving on from Arrow.
Right. Oh, before we move on from Arrow, well,
yeah.
The segue from Arrow, of course, is that I'm of the opinion that Arrow and The Good Place ended in the exact same way.
I kind of disagree, but I see what you're saying. Go on.
Well, in the end of the Good Place, of course, people go through a portal into true death. Whenever they're ready. And in Arrow, the Monitor, not content with murdering Oliver Queen, has to set his sights on the rest of the family and murders Felicity Smoke.
I am still taking that differently. Like, I know. I know that's what they did. I'm not, and again, like, we're going to go by what's on the text, and you're absolutely right. But I also, I mean, it's the crisis thing of, like, at the end, you know, the Earth 2 Superman gets his reward of,
right.
He gets taken to this little pocket dimension where he can live with Lois, and that's what they were supposed to be doing. They just kind of don't explain the pocket dimension thing very well.
No, I mean, when you call your pocket dimension the afterlife, even if it's,
right.
I think it was meant to be jokey, because of the way she says it, it's kind of jokey.
Right, like, that's the thing, she says it, not him, like, she doesn't know.
Right. And so, I'm thinking that they sort of missed a beat there, in the script.
Well, I think they kind of had to commit to it because we know that there was a multiverse. They couldn't be like, no, you're in a special pocket universe where no one can ever go. Because the minute they bring back the multiverse, people are like, well, why can't they?
Yes, exactly.
So yeah, they locked themselves in a weird closet. But anyway.
So I think we should start DMing the actor who played the monitor and saying, you
oh,
killed
Jesus
Felicity
Christ.
Smoke as well, you son of a bitch.
Just the, you know, they're going after, they should, and I like that the first reply is like, someone's like, for people who don't know, some apparently there are a bunch of fans who are going after the actor who played the monitor because they don't like the way that Ollie died.
Right.
As if the actor had anything to do with this. But of course, like, one of the very first replies, instead of being like, chill the fuck out, you fucking monsters, was they should be going after the writers instead. Like, how about we go after no one?
Yes. Yeah, that's
how
an
about,
idea.
If you don't like the fucking ending of the show, then don't like the ending of the show, but Jesus fuck.
Yeah. Please
sending
stop.
Death threats.
Please stop pinning your entire identity onto a fucking television show. Thank you. Goodbye. It's
also,
honestly terrifying.
Also, just from a petty point of view, if you're gonna do that shit, don't use Arrow. I mean, again, yeah. Like the last few seasons, but I mean, there has to be a better show, right? Like,
I know, yeah, you could stand something a little better overall.
Aim higher. Aim higher.
Stand better. Stand better next time.
You have failed this obsession.
You have failed modern fandom culture. Go watch Yuri on Ice. I mean, do a real sort of like
nice
stand thing. Yeah, there we go. I have not seen Yuri on Ice, but I know
I've
people
seen part
who
two
love
of it.
It
is delightful.
Yeah, this is what I've heard. It's sort of on my list
anyway,
of things to see. Anyway, yeah.
So Good Place ended.
Yeah, it ended.
There is of course some. I don't know. People are taking the ending in different ways, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that these ways are all valid. I find I don't agree with one of them, but I understand it, you know?
Right.
That there are a bunch of people, and me and Frank actually talked about this when they had the last episode, that were kind of like, okay, it's a suicide door. And that they felt it was kind of depressing that, like, you know... And just Frank mentioned the suicide door to me thing first,
right.
But off the ending, you know, let's leave Frank out of this because I'm not talking about him anymore. Whatnot, like that's
done
mean.
Talking
you know what
about
I mean?
You, Frank.
Right. Done talking about you. But there are people who are just like, you know, like the show is basically like, well, at the end, like, you know, like heaven sucks too, no matter what you do, so you should just die. And it's like,
oh no.
Like again, like I always came down to it. Even from the start, like I that. Stories needs ends, right?
Right.
Like, even the story of, like, you needs an end.
Right.
To kind of matter, and that is sort of what they were saying.
That's exactly... I mean, that's the that is the final lesson of The Good Place, that the fact that our lives are finite are what gives our lives shape and meaning. I mean, this is not a new thing to come up with by any means, but it is, I think, really a lot of what the show is about.
Right. And I think the reason I don't see it as a suicide door, personally... is, you know, the idea of suicide, of you're ending your life early, is a valid concept. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
what suicide is. But the idea that your life is eternal, and the only way out of that, like, it's not like you're ending it early.
No.
There's no other option to get off this train.
Exactly.
And it doesn't become, it just stops being suicide in my mind, it just becomes more that next step, and the fact that, like, stories do need endings. And when your ending comes around, that's okay too.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
and
the
I
wave
think,
returns to the ocean, right?
As they say. I mean, and
right.
Here's the thing. I mean, my first reaction when I heard that mentioned, I think you mentioned it to me, was like, I just thought, well, it can't be suicide because they're dead. And that's not a sophistry. I mean, quite literally, if you're... The whole thing with The Good Place is that these people have already lived their lives, so the notion of ending existence becomes a very different proposition. I mean, the suicide is sort of like, it's always coded as like criminal or sinful, even though some would say not. But I mean, even the word, you know, self-murder,
right.
The notion that you are essentially thieving something from God when you take your life and therefore you go straight to hell. This is a very different idea. I mean...
Sure,
yeah.
I mean, but again, like I just want to make clear, like I think we both do understand where people are coming from with that, and
right,
people who have issues with suicide, like personal depression and all this, like, I understand how this could hit them funny, especially.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm not, you know, saying, like, oh, you're wrong. Or no, it's a completely valid read. It's just not either of ours. But the thing that takes it even higher for me,
mm-hmm.
frankly, is that, and follow me down this road if you will, come with me on a journey, is that when we follow Eleanor through the door,
mm-hmm.
she turns into thousands of sparkles of light.
Right.
We follow one spark. That spark hits this guy and he makes a better choice, right?
Right.
Okay. So there are thousands of those sparks. You got to figure that basically her going back to the ocean, let's just say,
mm-hmm.
created like a thousand better choices.
Exactly.
But now that everyone is getting to the good place, like they even mentioned at the end of it, like millions of people, right?
Yes.
So that means now that not only is the wave returned to the ocean, but it's returned to the ocean and making the water better.
Yes.
That if everyone who walks through those doors is creating even just 1,000 better choices, that adds up, and of course it continues, and it starts becoming exponential. And so in a sense, that walking through the door improves the entire human race over time.
That's exactly
because,
it.
You know, this one better choice, like that memory of it, that moving forward and how that feels, like that puts them on the road to pass through the testing place, right?
Right.
Pass through it easier and faster and get to their reward. So it's kind of like in the end goal, like they didn't just fix the system, they fixed life on Earth in a long con.
Very, yeah. I really like that idea. And it's so true. That's obviously what the deal is, yeah.
So yeah, that just made me even happier with it.
I was going to say, what if they passed through the door and they ended up in Spatula City from Weird Al's VHS movie?
Maybe.
Or UHF. UHF, I mean. Maybe they do. Come on, kids, we're going to Spatula City. Further to the point about suicide, I was thinking that, I mean, it would have been very different if, for example, they said, instead of a door you can walk through, they'd be like, okay, so there's going to be this knife on a table. And when you're ready, you walk up and cut your throat and bleed out on the floor. See that?
I don't know.
Yeah. That would have been different.
I don't think that's honestly a fair argument. Like, I do get the suicide door thing. I was kind of hoping for reincarnation, but I also realized that the points of light were reincarnation, essentially.
Right.
Because, like, if you're hoping for actual reincarnation, you don't remember, so you're not you.
Yes.
Right? So this is the same thing. Like, you are influencing somebody else the same way, theoretically, like, reincarnation, like, your old soul influences your new one, except you're influencing more than one, so it's kind of super reincarnation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, because I honestly thought that's what was going to happen as well. I thought she was going to be, when Eleanor passed through, I thought we were going to follow the spark back to Earth and then, you know, into like a, you know, to a baby or like into somebody, you know, however it's done.
Right. And I had mentioned to somebody, I think to Frank and somebody else, that I had been hoping for reincarnation. What I hadn't mentioned, though, was my big hope. Like, my quiet little big hope was that they'd each pass through the door and reincarnate as other people in that same group. Like, just to fuck with us.
Yes.
Just kind of, like, meanly. It would have been terrible, but... Yes.
Oh, that's... Yes, that would have indeed have been terrible and delightful. Yeah, that's weird.
Course...
Sorry, yeah. Go on.
Go ahead.
Damn it! I think I was just going to say that in some sense, I don't think the final episode of the show could have done any wrong. Like, no, I mean, given where we knew it was going, I don't think they were. I think any choice they made would have been rewarding in some way. I mean, on the part of the showrunners, I mean, there are obviously some bad choices, but I mean...
I was going to say, right, like, they all walk through the door together, and they come out the other side, and there's Michael, and he does a demon life. He's like, you are in the bad place! Like, that would have been just curtains.
Here we
that
go
That would have been
again.
Terrible.
Yes, that would have been terrible.
Don't. Yeah.
But there's so many. I mean, the whole thing was there. I mean, it was kind of like a, it was a long, comforting goodbye,
right,
to these characters. So, and just even some of the bits of like clear sort of fan service, like having Nick Offerman show up, for example. Even that was just like, ah, that's so cute. I mean, yeah. It was.
And it's like the Parks and Rec finale, right? Like,
yes.
It's not really a finale so much as just a grace note.
Yeah. I think if I had any criticism of this particular episode, it's that it was not as funny as most as Good Place usually is.
That's fair.
It's not a huge quibble, and I totally get it. It felt more like a world you were sort of enjoying rather than like sort of getting, you know, laughs out of.
Sure. Yeah. Although I do still like, I mean, there were still laughs. I especially did like that at the end of it, Jason ends up spending like 1,000 years living as the monk he pretended to be in the first season.
I know. Oh my God, that was hilarious. That, and she's like a monk. What do you mean?
Also, if you didn't catch it, they did an after show on Seth Meyers really quick.
I watched that. Yeah, I watched that as well.
Did you notice that Darcy Kaden was wearing the necklace around her wrist?
I did not notice that.
Yep, she had it tied around her wrist.
Ah, that's really sweet.
I thought so.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was a great way to cap off this weird ass show.
Mm-hmm.
Straight down to Michael Reelman getting his piece of junk mail.
Michael Reelman. I forgot about that. Yeah. I found that interesting just from the perspective of the weird metatext of The Good Place, in which like Michael the architect is Michael equals Michael the showrunner.
Yeah.
So I'm like, what does Michael Shore want after all this time? Does he just want to like sort of take a break and enjoy the small things in life?
Well, I will say, like, I'm very glad when they had that bit and you're like, you know, the episode's coming to an end. And he's like, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, da-da-da, I was bracing myself for a cheesy, like, everything is fine.
Yes.
And to switch it up to take it sleazy was just, yeah, that's the show.
Yeah. It's funny because I was reading a roundtable on the finale from on Vox. And Emily Vanderwerf sort of was not happy with that little last line, but I don't think she remembered or realized where it was from, or at least from the sounds of it. I don't think she knew that it was a line. It was a callback. So
right, but, yeah, that's fair. No, things that I know they couldn't do, obviously, but because we know that this is in the same universe as Parks and Rec.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you remember when they're on Earth, there's the Pawnee and all that.
Yeah.
There's, like, Pawnee references. Like, really, when they're mentioning people who have passed on to The Good Place, I wanted Little Sebastian.
That would have been pretty delightful.
Like, that should have been the only person that, like, even Sean was like, yes!
I think, what was it? There was something else. I cannot remember what it was. But, the fact that you had at one point you saw on the various screens you see like Brent Norwalk still unable to like
yes.
grasp the fundamentals of being a decent person. That was freaking hilarious.
Yeah, no, and Tahani's little list that you get two different shots of.
Right.
Which I paused once to look at the first part of it and didn't and forgot to write any notes on it and then didn't catch the second one. But it was the same kind of like their lists are weird.
Yes. I cannot remember. I thought I'll remember that, and then of course I
right. Yeah, it. No, yeah. It's fair.
Yeah.
But no, it was what it needed to be, frankly.
Yeah. Yeah. I quite agree. And it took. And it was like I realized. I mean, I thought. I sort of guessed what the shape of the episode would be just based on the title, you know, whenever you're ready.
Right.
And then I was sort of, part of me was holding out hope because I don't like fun, I guess, or I don't like sincerity. I was holding out hope for some weird, little twist, but within the first like 2 minutes, I was like, okay, that's not what we're gonna get. We're just.
Well, I think the twist was that there wasn't a twist.
Yeah, exactly. That's
which is silly, but there you go.
Yeah, and I was also reading an article. It's funny because remember when we were doing our best of the decade, that I sort of for my best show of the decade, I said The Leftovers, and turns out, I mean, not only do they do a little shout out to The Leftovers in the final episode of Good Place. But Shore sat down with Lindelof because he loved The Leftovers so much and sort of said, okay, I've got this idea.
Right.
How, like, do you have any advice for me in executing this successfully? Because what Shore had in mind was kind of a sitcom version of The Leftovers, something that sort of told this tightly integrated story over a limited span of time and so on and so forth. Apparently Lindelof's major advice was have a plan, which kind of makes sense. And it's funny because I sometimes feel that, especially in that last season, if there is any sort of like another any sort of other critique I could lay at the Good Place's door, was that sometimes the plan seemed to like get in the way of just letting episodes flow. Because sometimes like episode 11 seemed sort of kind of like low stakes and not much happened. Then episode 12 was just suddenly everything got resolved. Not that I mind. I still really enjoyed it. But it wasn't quite as like even, I thought, as it could have been. And I thought perhaps the reason is because they picked their destination and they just had to make it work one way or another.
Possibly.
Possibly.
Also, on a slightly related note, apparently Shout Factory is releasing in May the complete series on Blu-ray, and while they don't have a list of the extra features, there's apparently at least a full, like, A, there's going to be, like, all the extra features on that were always released, like, you know.
Right.
Deleted stuff and the outtakes and all that. But there's supposed to be at least one full disc full of extras.
Oh, sweet. I am extremely looking forward to that.
Yeah. I hope they have like today.
I hope they have all like the Good Place podcast things as well, because that would be delightful.
Yeah, I mean, you can just listen to those separately. I mean, but that'd be an interesting addition.
Mm-hmm.
To put them on the disc.
Yeah. Why not?
Why not?
It's there. It's there to be put on. Yeah, well, whatever. I'd be very pleased to get that. There are not many shows that I these days that I want to, like, sort of collect on Blu-ray, but I think Good Place is. I want a physical object that I can say this is the Good Place.
You know? Right. No, I did the same thing with Doom Patrol.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, and like the Doom Patrol thing has been like because you know especially with Doom Patrol like you have to, you know, subscribe to see it and all this. So I've already had friends just borrowing the discs.
Right. What does it have for extras?
I actually don't know because I pretty much got it in, and a friend was like, "Oh, you have that? Can I borrow it?" And I was like, "Okay." So, I actually haven't seen it since like a few days after I got it.
Oh, that's hilarious! Yeah,
I should get that back hopefully soon.
Yeah,
but yeah, I honestly don't know. I could look it up real quick though. Let me see if the listing says.
I'm curious now.
Yes. Like, hopefully it has something, right?
It'd be a shame.
It doesn't say.
Yeah.
Well,
that was anticlimactic.
Yeah, that was a useless bit of moment there. however, looking through really quick, just like the Amazon reviews, just kind of looking for anyone mentioning extras. I have already seen one person that's like, ugh, this show sucks, just watch Titans, so we're closing that. Anyway, and we're done.
Oh my god, but freaking people. This is why, I mean, just that sort of thing is why, obviously, The Good Place is never going to happen in real life, because you're just, some people are just never, ever going to, like, ever going to get to The Good Place with, you know, we know it now.
It feels a little harsh towards Titans, but I take your meaning. People aren't never going to get to The Good Place because Titans exist. It's just, it's a take. So, continue on the death and grief train.
Oh boy, can we? Can we?
Can we? There was another episode of Magicians.
Yay! I mean, yeah, it was a great episode.
Right.
But yeah, boy oh boy, they really put you through it, and it was, I think, necessary.
Yes. It's interesting, actually. It answered something I had assumed had was a different answer than we got. And yet not really at all. In the season 4 finale, when Elliot joins the circle at the end,
mm-hmm.
Alice, like, puts her hand on his leg, and I thought that was the... She knew about the year and a day stuff.
Oh, okay.
And obviously she didn't, but she also knew that they were, like, in love, so it still works.
Right. Yeah.
But, yeah, no, that scene between the two of them on the mountain was just award-winning work from both of them.
Oh my god, yes. Yeah, I've never been the hugest fan, or I'm not, I should say, I like all the actors. I've never really been the hugest fan of Olivia Taylor-Dudley, aka Alice Quinn, but I think she really sort of pulled out some chops on this particular episode.
Yeah, I think that, again, I think she has, and she shows it occasionally in the show, they just haven't given her enough to do with it.
I think that's,
you know,
it's not her
Christmas
with
Santa
skills.
Claus shows a lot of it.
Yeah, that's true. I forgot about the Santa Claus bits. It's weird that we're talking about a show where I can say, I forgot about the Santa Claus scenes.
That's okay, I have a better one.
What's that?
You know, the, like, I think I almost fucked the Dark King. The guy who plays the Dark King
mm-hmm.
also played Sir Effingham.
Oh, you're kidding.
Nope.
Oh, that's kind of delightful.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, I just deeply appreciate that.
Yeah, no joke. I have no further commentary on that. Although
right.
I was wondering when he showed up, I was wondering, because the actor looked really familiar, but I don't know where else I've seen him. And obviously I wasn't thinking, is that the pig guy?
No, but I'm sure he's been in other stuff. And what do you think of our fillery scenes? Well, our other fillery scenes.
Oh my god. Oh yeah, that's it's weird. Yeah, that's there was also the Margot, Finn, and Josh bits. That was probably, I mean, until the ending when Margot basically sabotages herself. I mean, it was probably some of the most fun scenes I've seen in The Magicians in a long time. Yeah, that was absolutely great watching them fight. And the moment that Margot looks at Fan and sees her scratching herself and puts two and two together, I thought was... Like,
yeah.
We're going to turn to a wolf, and so is she for some reason.
Uh-huh.
Like, oh, Jesus, yeah.
Anyway, the Dark King is Sean McGuire, who was in Once Upon a Time as Robin Hood.
Okay.
He was also Ian Fleming in Timeless, if that helps.
Oh, okay. All right. So he just plays,
he's
like...
He's been around.
Sort of dashing English dudes. That's his that's
Yeah,
his
I'm, like,
job.
Looking through his IMDb, and pretty much that seems... Like, he was in EastEnders for a while.
Oh, okay. Well... I think
playing,
that's a rite
sure,
of
a dashing English dude.
Yeah, I think that's a rite of passage of some kind. If you're working British, British.
Well, what I love is his IMDb page has a still from a trailer for, I guess, something he's supposed to be doing. But the still is a penguin attacking him by, like, landing on his face with its ass, like they're mid fight.
Is he in Doolittle or something? Jesus Christ.
No.
Wow.
So that's a thing.
That is a thing. Well, good for him and his I hope he can defend himself against that penguin ass attack.
Yeah.
Or is it ass penguin attack? I don't know the terminology. I'm not a fighter.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But anyway. you know, hopefully, I do hope that this last episode doesn't end the, you know, how do we deal with Quentin stuff, but it really kind of comes to a head for everyone now.
Yeah.
Like, everyone has at least made their peace with it, if not moved on, so we can actually start going somewhere else.
I think
and
so.
Not that we have to, but I think we have to. Like, I think a full season of just that would get old.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And they're better than that.
I think so, too. Yeah, I think, I mean, it really, it's like when you grieve, I mean, grieving and death is about the wreckage that is left behind in the lives of other people and how they have to heal. So, and right. And really, it's Alice and Elliot who do have to do the most healing. So, having them come to terms with it and with each other, I thought was probably that was pretty much the climax of that.
Yeah, I mean, and specifically having Elliot kind of deal with his shit honestly for once means maybe he won't get trapped again.
Exactly. Yeah, letting go of the letter, which I still kind of picture ending up in Quentin's hands. Maybe
I mean,
not.
You can't
the
do anything
timeline.
About it, but sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or just we get Penny 40 who just like comes out to him and is like, dumbasses, and just kind of leaves again.
Oh God, yes. Yeah, and this episode did not have any. I think no Jade Taylor at all.
No.
No.
No Katie in this.
Right. That's all right.
Yeah. We'll not everyone. I mean, they do that. Like, not every episode has everyone.
Right.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
I also do like the weird note that apparently, like, there's another class, at least one other class, in Break Bills that, like, saved the universe at some point.
Yes.
And we get to see, like, the wreckage of them. And I'm just like, this school sucks. I just.
Yeah, every so often, like, the. Some people avert apocalypse and are consequently like destroyed or fundamentally damaged in ways that they can never sort of walk back. Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that sounds like university, so, you know, whatever.
Kind of.
And I love the fact that they. Sorry, I just love the fact that they go to that person's business, PK Endeavors, and they've just redressed like the set.
And they announce it, too. Yeah. They're not lying, you know.
Yeah, they walk in, they're like, wait a minute, this looks just like the physical kid's room. I'm like, that's a way to save on some money and time there.
I also did like that in the list of, like, the huge events, like, the apocalypse-level events that have happened because of what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
Is, like, you know, the end of the dinosaurs, Pompeii, mm-hmm. You know, auto-tune. I was just like, guys!
Yes. I kind of got a little kick out of that.
Yeah, it's just purely magicians. Like, that is the thing for me. It's like, no matter how dark and, like, grief-filled and all this that they ever go, they're still that show.
Yes, exactly.
That's just going to have the stupid, like, petty weird joke. Because it made the writers laugh, and the hell with you.
Exactly. We're going to do an end game on this. When did you find the time to watch? Never mind.
Like, that killed me, but then I think the follow-up to all of those, because, you know, we've had, like, two or three scenes like that over the years.
Right.
Of Elliot being like, oh, you're going to go to this place? And it's like, yeah, I'm finally reading the books.
That's right. Yes, I got to kick out of that, too. And also the fact that they reach the edge of the inhabitable territory in Fillory, and then, you know, beyond which the monsters lurk. And there's like this sign, Adventure Tours, 500 yards this way. I'm like, I guess Fillory really is just like Earth.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I have seen one theory that just because of the, you know, the Dark King is a wizard and mentions that his parents are from Earth.
Right.
That he's Quentin's kid.
Maybe. Yeah, I doubt it
just because we saw Quentin's kid grown up.
That's true.
This is my only problem with it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... It seems unlikely.
Like, yeah, it feels a little weird, and... Yeah.
Well, it's like one, like, it's like fan theories that try to, like, sort of tie absolutely everything in together,
right.
which is fun, even if it's probably not Correct. I mean, it will be interesting if there it turned out to be the child, like the child of one of the characters, for example. But who knows?
See, I think that he's actually related to that other group we just got. We just heard a little bit about that saved the universe once.
Maybe.
Because it'll tie them in. And it'll be this kind of mirror reflection of, like, this class didn't handle this shit so well.
Right. So maybe you guys can.
Right. And maybe it'll be completely unrelated, which would be a breath of fresh air.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just also, like, no, he's just a dick. Like, whatever.
Also, the other thing I find really fascinating as Magicians has gone on in time, they've really sort of taken minor and one-note characters and sort of given them genuine roles and you know, arcs. I'm thinking, like, yeah, specifically Josh and Fenn. Like, well, and particularly Fenn, who was just sort of like there as kind of a joke at the start, and so is Josh. And now they're genuine sort of like secondary characters, but still.
I would add Dean Fogg as well. And I think the Fenn thing is even funnier because the first episode she's in, mm-hmm, different actress.
Really?
Yeah, if you go back and look, it's like the last episode of I think season one when Elliot gets married to Fenn.
Oh,
different actress, and then the first season of season two, it's current actress for it. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm gonna have to take a look at that because I did not realize that. It's been a while since I've watched season one, so there you go.
But no, I was mentioning to somebody that, like, one of the things that fascinates me is, like, you see this happen a lot in sitcoms. Or, you know, shows that have, like, 22 episodes a year, and, like, somewhere in season 7, you realize that, like, a bunch of these side characters are major characters.
Yes.
Because they slowly accumulate. But this is season 5 of a show that has 10 to 13 episodes a year.
Yes.
And so, like, the fact that they do that much work that quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly, yeah. And in sitcoms, it almost feels like you need, like, a lot of those, like, in the examples you're thinking of, like those long-running shows, you need to sort of eventually sort of bring minor characters to the fore because people get tired of watching the same old people with this because the stories get exhausted. But
they need someone new to bounce off of.
Exactly. Or everybody is like, oh, that Boner, he's so funny. And then you get, like, endless freaking scenes of Boner. Or Spike in Buffy the Vampire Slayer. But I think in The Magicians, it doesn't feel like that. I mean, it just feels like they genuinely have things to say with these people, so they're gonna say them. So, which.
Oh, and I think in both cases, it started off with that thing that they were pushing against for years now, which is the just because it looks like a side character doesn't mean that the character doesn't have anything to say.
Yes, exactly.
And so that kind of forces them to go like, okay, well, you got to prove that too. You can't just say it, right?
Precisely.
And now that, you know, they're becoming bigger things, so yeah, it's good to see.
It is. I am a fan.
Because yeah, when I did my rewatch before this season, I remembered, like, the first time through watching Josh in his early episodes, like the first, like, you know, three seasons, really, two and a half seasons. I was kind of like, yeah, whatever. It's like this joke of a, like, look at this dark side, like the Todd kind of.
Yeah.
And, like, watching it this time through, though, it's like, no, you can see he kind of starts at the edge and grows very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Fenn felt like, outside of the first appearance, which, again, was funnily enough a different actress, when she had, like, no lines and she was just this thing, that the minute they did season two and they're like, well, Elliot and Margot were trapped in Fillory, let's add this character.
Yeah.
And they just committed to her very quickly because I think they realized the actress is very funny.
Yes, I think I think that was it. And they sort of tried, felt like they tried a few sort of, like, directions for Fenn. It almost felt like they just sort of let, instead of giving her a sort of, like, a story, they kind of just let Curran's sort of persona lead a little bit.
Right. Like, yeah, and she became, like, bubbly and happy and murderous all at the same time, like, quietly.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, so, and like, suddenly she was, like, a major character, but, like, without you even really noticing it.
Right.
Which is an interesting sort of little line.
Also, I'm just really proud of the show for doing the whole Margot thing with the, you know, no, I still, like, feel this way, and yes, I'm pissed, but also I don't blame you, and, the, like, can I not have, like, a complex emotion? just the fact that, like, that's how that works sometimes, and that's okay. Like, it doesn't have to be this big soap opera thing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe with other characters it would be, depending on the character.
Right.
But it's depending on the person, not the plot.
Right.
Which is, again, something that most shows aren't brave enough to do. Speaking of most shows that aren't brave enough to do, and just moving away from Magicians as we kind of start closing up here, did you get a chance to catch up on Supernatural?
No, I have not.
Well, there was one more episode this last week, and then there won't be an episode till March, so you have some time.
Oh, good. Okay.
But you need to, because especially these last two episodes are just... I meant to check. I guess I'll check right now. Because when I was describing this episode, it was one of those, was this a, a Ben Edlund episode?
Oh, okay. And?
Like, episode 10 felt like it could have been a Ben Edlund episode. Which is interesting. Let's see if I can actually find anything on it.
I thought he hadn't written for Supernatural in a while. Oh, that could be too. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like... It is one of those things that it felt like one of his.
Ah, gotcha.
Come on. Like, give me something here. Oh, internet, why you fail me?
You have failed this podcast, internet.
It really has.
Yeah, well, while you're doing that, I will try on my very good internet. Oh wow, okay. Look at my internet. So good. Alright, hold on.
Here we go. Weird. Oh no, it's just a created by, okay.
Oh.
I was like, was that actually written by Kripke? No, it was written by Andrew Dabb.
I don't know.
Who has written a bunch of stuff.
Huh.
You know, he's like been the executive producer on like 80 episodes of Supernatural. He's written like 3 episodes, most of them this season and last. Or, no, I'm sorry, he's written like 45 episodes. Jesus.
Oh my god.
Yeah, he's written episodes all the way back to 2008.
Oh, okay, so he's been there from, well, not from the get-go, but he's been there doing it for a while.
Yeah, and he's the showrunner from 2016 to 2017, so.
Oh, okay. Well, so, yeah. Thank you, Andrew Dabb.
Yeah, seriously.
If that is his real name. Yeah, no, I will. I'm looking for. I'm going to have to catch up on this season. I've only watched.
Well, you have time now because it's.
Yeah, I think
again,
I
got it's
first,
gone until March.
Right, first 3 that I got in. So this is more than enough time for me to like chew through 7 or 8 episodes.
Yeah. And of course, again, like the CW is doing its weird scheduling thing, you know, the Super Bowl's today, so there's no Batwoman or Supergirl.
Right.
There's going to be Black Lightning, Flash, and Legends are back again.
All right. So we get some Flash. Look forward to Legends. I have to get back into Black Lightning. When I sort of stopped watching,
I'm like an episode behind.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I am a whole season behind at this point, so I'm going to have to sit down and get through a few. I will.
This episode of Legends coming up will take place in 1947 L.A. with Bugsy Siegel. So,
oh, nice.
We're going to do a gangster episode because, of course, we are.
Of course. Well, I guess I think we're pretty much wrapping up. So why don't we call time?
Alrighty.
Get some music.
Use some Muzak.
Muzak.
Woo. Mm-hmm.